When you have the books in your hand, you would think maybe it would be difficult to hippity hoppity because you're weighted down a little bit. But actually, no. It's like, you know, good books don't have any calories, right? I mean, they're just light and airy and perfect.
Weightless.
That's right, weightless. But they are indeed important, and we have a wonderful group of booksellers today, a trio to tell us of some fantastic books, three booksellers from two bookstores telling us about titles that we should pay attention to. We welcome Susanna Hermans from Oblong Books in Rhinebeck and Millerton. Hello, Susanna.
Hi, Joe. Good morning.
Good morning. So good to see you. We welcome Connie Brooks and Heather Boyne from Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York. How are you both?
Good. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Really nice to see you. All right, Susanna, we'll give you the mic first. What do you got?
Okay, so the first books I brought are two mysteries. The first is All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker. This came super highly recommended to me by fellow booksellers, which I feel like is my most trusted group.
Absolutely. I've heard so much about this book, and yet I don't know much about it.
Exactly, yeah. So it came out earlier this summer. It's set in 1975 in Missouri. Our main characters are these two kids. There are girls who have gone missing in their community, and the boy witnesses an attempted kidnapping of a teenage girl and stops it, but he himself gets abducted instead. Okay. And his best friend, this girl named Saint, who reminds me a lot of Scout Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird, she decides she needs to help find out what happened to him because nobody seems to care. Mm. So that one is absolutely phenomenal. I also would recommend it on audio. It's really excellent. Mm-hmm. And then on a bit of a like sillier, lighter note, Janice Hallett's The Examiner. So Janice is British, and she writes what I'm calling contemporary epistolary novels, which are set entirely in text messages, WhatsApp messages, DMs, emails.
Is that going to be a sign in the store, contemporary? That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's so much fun. And this is great, I would say, for like fans of Thursday Murder Club, folks who like a good mystery, but not a lot of blood and guts. You cannot put it down. She really weaves these stories so complexly that you will not know what's going to happen in the end. But her endings are super satisfying. So if you're a nerd like me, you'll like it a lot.
The Examiner by Janice Hallett is the book just described. Before that, All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker. All right, Connie, you're up.
So I brought in I brought in two fantasy books for adults, and I have some adventure books for children. And I wanted to start with one of the fantasy books for adults, and this is The Sapling Cage by Margaret Kiljoy. This is going to be the first novel of a planned trilogy in what author Kiljoy is calling the Daughters of the Empty Throne series. Our protagonist, Laurel, has always dreamed of becoming a witch and all it entails, learning magic, fighting monsters, and exploring the world beyond the small town where she and her mother run the stables. Even though a strange plague is killing the trees throughout the kingdom and witches are being blamed for it, Laurel wants nothing more than to join them. There's only one problem. All witches are women, and she was born a boy. When the coven comes to claim her best friend, Laurel disguises herself in a dress and joins in her friend's place, leaving home and her old self behind. The minions of a power-mad duchess are roaming the countryside, and the cause of the blight that is killing trees remains unknown. Nearer to home, Laurel lives in fear that her secret will be discovered and that she'll be cast out of the coven or worse. Margaret Kiljoy has spun a tale of magic, power struggles, trans identity, and self-invention, and I have to say, it works beautifully.
The name of the book is The Sapling Cage by Margaret Kiljoy. All right, Heather.
All right. I can't believe it, but I'm going to recommend a romance book.
All right.
All right. Not an ordinary romance, an epic romance, a true story. My first book is A Wilder Shore, The Romantic Odyssey of Fanny and Robert Louis Stevenson by Camille Perry. It's published by Viking and is out now. Most people are familiar with Robert Louis Stevenson. He was a brilliant writer, best known for Treasure Island, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, A Child's Garden of Verses. But who was Fanny? Well, Fanny and Robert were the oddest of odd couples. When they met, he was a scrawny, sickly, atheist bohemian wannabe writer who was financially dependent on his strictly Scottish parents. Fanny was 11 years older than Lewis, an American, a wife, a mother. She had followed her first husband to the American West, where she was a respectable gun-toting homesteader's wife among thousands of gold miners. After years of enduring her husband's infidelity, she left him and traveled to Europe with her children to study painting in France, where she met Lewis, who was there with some friends at the same school. Well, it was love at first sight. He was charming and charismatic, and she was fun and wild and unlike any woman he had ever known. But his family had other ideas, and she returned to America. Undaunted, he went after her. Isn't that romantic? Traveling across America to be with her. And thus they began their lives together. Meeting her started a breakthrough with him as a writer. Fanny was already nudging him towards greatness by forcing him to live a bigger life than he had known. And she nursed him to health, and their lives together became the source for his understanding of the human character that he has in his books. She also became an author, publishing short stories and collaborating with her husband. There's much, much more, including the use of psychedelics, world travel, living on a tropical island. But most of all, it is the story of their marriage and all its complexity. It's an adventure that has page-turning excitement.
The name of the book is A Wider Shore, The Romantic Odyssey of Fanny and Robert Louis Stevenson. Good stuff. All right, Susanna.
Okay, so my next book is The Burning Plain by Juan Rulfo in a new translation by Douglas Weatherford. So Juan Rulfo is new to me and sort of caught my attention last year when all of a sudden people were coming in and asking for his book, Pedro Páramo. He wrote during the 1950s and is one of Mexico's most significant writers. This is a collection of stories that are set in Jalisco, Mexico, between like 1910 and 1929, Mexican Revolution era. And there are just stories of people's lives, living hard lives, that they're, you know, in poverty, they're in danger, they're just trying to survive. I could not put this collection down. I was absolutely blown away by it. And, he's been compared to Hemingway and Garcia Marquez. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, he's a name that may be new to some of us mm-hmm. American readers, but is a classic writer very much worth discovering.
The name of the book is The Burning Plain. All right. Connie.
I have another fantasy book for adults. This is Buried Deep in Other Stories by Naomi Novik. Novik is hands down one of the best fantasy writers alive and writing today. And her new collection of short stories includes insights into her writing process, which I found fascinating, and how she goes about constructing her fantastical worlds. The stories in Buried Deep include nods to her Temeraire series, the Magical Halls of the Scholomance trilogy, and her standalone novels, Spinning Silver and Uprooted. Although don't worry if you haven't read any of those, these stories all stand on their own. The collection also includes a reimagining of Pride and Prejudice in which Elizabeth Bennet captains a long-winged dragon. And perhaps most exciting of all, at least for me and some of her other fans, the first glimpse of the world of Abandon, the setting of Novik's upcoming fantasy series. Abandon is a deserted continent populated only by silent and enigmatic architectural mysteries.
Good stuff. Fascinating. Buried Deep and Other Stories by Naomi Novik. All right.
All right. For my second selection, I'm suggesting that the curious readers out there mix it up and take a deep dive into a single subject nonfiction book. And what I mean by that is that a book that explores in depth one topic from its creation to the modern day and how that thing is woven its way into the American experience. And my choice is The Notebook, A History of Thinking on Paper by Roland Allen. It is published in North America by Biblioasis. Roland lives in Brighton, England. His biography says that he has kept a diary for decades and describes himself as enjoying stationery a little too much. I see you out there, my fellow peeps. Well, and that's where the story begins, with a cult classic, The Moleskine Notebook. Now, Roland discovers that this little notebook not only intrigues him, but that it's the go-to tool for everyone, from Picasso to Hemingway. Really, anyone who keeps that little sewn, rounded-edged journal near enough to ensure that nothing is forgotten for the lack of a place to write it down. My husband has, for his entire life as a teacher, almost 50 years, carried a notebook in his breast pocket to jot down quotes, questions, and words he wants to remember. In Roland's book, he explores the concept of the notebook as an important part of the creative and organizational process of millions through the centuries. Agatha Christie was famous for keeping dozens of notebooks on her ideas about poisoning and plot lines for her mystery novels.
The poisoning notebook.
They have them. Charles Darwin's notebook of animals he discovered on his travels helped him to construct his theory of evolution. And Bob Dylan used his notebook to write his song lyrics and later his books. So you might think in this technological age, we would be more wedded to taking notes on our phones. But Roland discovers that the humble paper notebook is by far the most popular medium today. Unlike artificial intelligence and the use of other digital methods, the act of physically writing down words and organizing thoughts can help our memory and change the way we think. Many people ask us to recommend books that are uplifting at the store. And choosing a book like this with its focus on our humanity is a great way to feel our connectedness with others through an everyday object that we all use.
The Notebook, A History of Thinking on Paper by Roland Allen. And if you're reading a book called The Notebook and it's nothing like Heather mentioned, you've got the wrong one.
Yep. Yeah. I guess, please.
That's a different one.
The book made me cry.
That's the
Susanna.
Wrong one.
Okay, next up I have Band People, Life and Work in Popular Music by Franz Nicolay. This is a look at all of the people in the music industry who aren't the big name, you know, the accompaniment, I can't say that word.
Accompaniment.
There we go. You know, the backup singers, the folks in the horn section, folks who are very, very close to these big personalities, these huge egos, but don't really get the limelight. And Franz has interviewed dozens of folks for this book. It's really incredible. I think that this book is the perfect gift for the holidays for your music lover. That's not like the obvious celebrity bio, celebrity memoir. Like, this is like a little bit deeper cut. Franz is a writer and a musician, a faculty member at Bard College, and you can meet him this Thursday night at 6:30 at Morton Library in Rhinecliff, where he'll be in discussion with Joe Hagen.
Really good stuff. Ooh. The name of the book is Band People, Life and Work in Popular Music, and the event happening on the 26th, which is the day after tomorrow. Okay. Connie.
Well, Susanna, you just sold a book to me, so I'm writing that one down. Excellent. Going on the holiday list for some people that I can think of. Thank you very much. So I have a fantasy book for children this time, and this is Impossible Creatures by Catherine Rundell with illustrations by Ashley McKenzie. Catherine Rundell is the author of Rooftoppers, Cartwheeling in Thunderstorms, The Wolf Wilder, and several other books. The Wolf Wilder happens to be a favorite of mine and one that I have done as a read aloud with a classroom of children. Her new book is Impossible Creatures. It's what we call a middle grade novel, meaning that its age recommendation is for 8 to 12 year olds, although all ages can enjoy this book. And though it just published here in the US, it was originally published in February in the UK, where it has already received rave reviews. Critics have been comparing Rundell and this book, the writing of this book, to Philip Pullman, J.R.R. Tolkien's works, C.S. Lewis's works. The reviews here in the U.S. have been no less stunning, and Impossible Creatures has already earned starred reviews from Kirkus, the School Library Journal, Booklist, and Publishers Weekly. But you are wondering, what about the story? So enter the archipelago. It's a cluster of unmapped islands where magical creatures of every kind have thrived for thousands of years, until now. Now the magic is dwindling and magical creatures are suddenly dying. Enter Christopher, who, on a day that will change his life forever, saves a baby griffin from drowning. Which I will point out, like you do when a baby griffin is drowning, you step in and help. It's the day he meets Mal, a girl on the run and in desperate need of his help. Christopher and Mal set off on an epic adventure, racing from island to island in the archipelago as they search for someone, anyone, who can explain what is happening. Along the way, they will consult with sphinxes, battle a kraken, and negotiate with dragons. An epic tale deserves epic illustrations, and Ashley McKenzie has brought impossible creatures to life with more than 60 illustrations, including a map and a bestiary of magical creatures. And you had me at includes a map. I am all in.
All good stuff. Impossible Creatures by Catherine Rundell with illustrations by Ashley McKenzie. All right. Heather.
All right. My third selection goes along with the paper thing. This book is a planetarium and other extraordinary pop-up contraptions created by Kelly Anderson. We recently ordered a copy of this for a customer who was looking for a creative and compelling gift for her grandson. Chronicle Publishing has recently done a reprint of the 2017 edition. Kelly Anderson is a graphic artist and paper engineer who works with a wide range of design mediums. She has produced three amazing pop-up books, The Human Body, This Book is a Planetarium, and This Book is a Camera. She has taught art and graphic design at Cooper Union, NYU, and has even given a TED Talk on disruptive art. So this book explains and actively demonstrates through six functional pop-up contraptions the scientific wonders at play behind seemingly simple everyday things. There's a constellation projecting planetarium, a strummable musical instrument, a geometric drawing generator, or spirograph, for those who remember those things, a perpetual calendar, a message encryptor and decoder, and a speaker that amplifies sound. So imagine simple constructions that demonstrate the phenomena of light, time, sound waves, and mathematics all made out of paper. The age range for this is 6 to 126. It is an amazing gift for my customer's grandson and even for your big person. So get a copy because they're available now.
The name of the book is A Planetarium and Other Extraordinary Pop-Up Contraptions by Kelly Anderson. Susanna.
Okay, turning to kids' books, I brought this middle grade novel, A Strange Thing Happened in Cherry Hall by Jasmine Warga. Jasmine is one of our most beloved writers for kids right now, and her new book is a little bit younger than her others. It's for 8 and up, but I think it's totally fine as a read aloud for 6 and up. It's about a kid whose mom works at an art museum. And a painting is stolen. Mm. Of course, he and his best friend are going to try to solve this mystery. It might involve a ghost, and it also might involve a turtle who's observing everything that's going on outside this art museum.
Like they do.
It is truly delightful, and I think, you know, Jasmine can't really go wrong, and she has not with this beautiful book.
That's incredible. The name of the book is A Strange Thing Happened in Cherry Hall by Jasmine Warga. Excellent. All right. Thank you, Susanna. Connie.
Is staying with the same age range, 8 to 12, but these would be great read-alouds for, you know, 6 up as well. I have two more books for children. These are two books in a new series for middle grade readers by Beth Lincoln, and the series is called The Swifts. The first book is A Dictionary of Scoundrels, and the second is A Gallery of Rogues. What you need to know about the Swift family is that on the day they are born, every Swift child is brought before the Sacred Family Dictionary. They are given a name and a definition. A definition it is assumed they will grow up to match. So, meet our protagonist, who is named Shenanigan. Destined for a life of mischief-making and risk-taking. But Shenanigan has other dreams, including becoming a detective. In the first book, A Dictionary of Scoundrels, Shenanigan is happily anticipating the big Swift family reunion, where she might get a chance to try her detective skills to hunt for Great Uncle Vile's long-lost treasure. But everyone's plans are put in disarray when someone arriving at the family reunion gives Arch-Aunt Schadenfreude a deadly shove down the stairs. In the second book, A Gallery of Rogues, Shenanigan must try to track down thieves who have stolen a valuable painting from Swift House. These two stories are rich with humor, wordplay, and good old-fashioned sleuthing.
Really good stuff. And so A Dictionary of Scoundrels, The Swifts.
Yes, yes.
Excellent. All right.
All right. Here we go. The final selection for me is a magical children's picture book, The Boy and the Elephant by Freya Blackwood. There is magic in a well-written and illustrated children's book. So what happens when there are no words? Well, this book beautifully proves the power of imagination. We're introduced to a city-dwelling little boy and his slump-shouldered journey throughout the day. Everyone, including his classmates and even his parents, are busy, sometimes too busy for him. Our little friend fills his silence by spending time in the tree-filled, empty lot on his block. The trees morph into shapes of animals. Giraffes, elephants, and camels become his friends. One day, a sign goes up. The land has been sold, and the trees have been marked for removal. The boy can't lose his animal friends, so he comes up with a plan. The silence of telling ourselves the story in our head is powerful, but you can also imagine sharing this book with a child and having the child explain what is happening in the story. Perhaps it will open a pathway for discussion about feeling lonely or the sadness that comes over us when we see the nature around us slowly disappear. It is truly a tree hugger book, and it goes on my list of one of my favorite children's books this year.
The Boy and the Elephant. All right. Finish us up on the books.
All right. I have two books for teens. The first is Payal Mehta's Romance Revenge Plot by Preethi Chibber. This is a delight. If you are a rom-com fan, you will enjoy this book. It's about a girl who's had a crush on the popular boy forever, and it finally looks like he might be noticing her and talking to her. But the first thing he does is say, oh, you should date my Indian friend. And that makes her feel weird. She doesn't like that she's seen as Indian first. Why can't she be the cool girl that she is? So she enlists the help of her nemesis to win over this popular boy. But of course, perhaps it's her nemesis who is the bright one for her all along. And then I'm always looking for books for teenage boys.
Boys are so dumb.
I mean, I'm not going to
You're
say
not going to win this argument.
Speaking of boys, so many boys drop out of reading when they get to high school, and I'm always looking for books that will engage them. This new book, Aisle 9 by Ian X. Cho, came out today. So it's a set a few years from now. The apocalypse has occurred, like it does.
Yeah, of course.
And like demons are just popping out of portals left and right. Like life is life. That's how life is now. Our main character works at a big box store, and he's just like trying to get through the day. He has amnesia, so he's not really like sure what happened to him before, but he's just trying to like punch his time card, get some money, move on with his life, and like dodge the demons in the aisle nine. I'm calling this like Superstore meets the apocalypse. It's very funny, dark for sure, but it will capture your attention and keep you reading. It's great fun.
Sounds really, really fun. Good stuff. Name of the book is Aisle 9. We have 40 seconds. Connie, give us a plug.
I can just quickly mention that we have a great event coming up next Tuesday. That's October 1st at 6 o'clock. We will be welcoming young adult author Kate Sweeney to Bat and Kill Books to discuss her new novel called This Is Not a Dead Girl Story, which is a dark, twisty mystery in which a teen must try to find her missing cousin, a girl whom everyone believes is dead.
All right. Any?
Oh, come out tonight at our store in Rhinebeck. Julia Dahl will be talking about her new mystery novel.
And you can find out all of this cool stuff by going to the websites for these wonderful bookstores, oblongbooks.com, batandkillbooks.com, and go to wamc.org/roundtable to see the full list. You're all wonderful. Thank you very much. Appreciate it and appreciate all that you do.
Thanks,
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.